Blessings again to everyone as we gather to start another day and look at what this calling that God has placed on your life, on our lives, what it looks like in the classroom in a day-to-day manner. I really appreciated what you shared this morning, David. It ties in with some of my thoughts, and that piece that you pointed out that we probably usually miss, I miss it. And it actually lines up with what I'm talking about today, because today we're talking about students being valued as image bearers. And if every student is someone that we want to love because they carry the image of God, they have something God-given inside of them, and you want to treat them in such a way, then I think we would do what Jesus did. We will behold them, or we will look right in their faces, and we will love them. Has anybody ever done that to you? I know of about two people that just really stand out to me, that I've met them, I've greeted them, and then they looked in my face, even though they didn't know me well, they looked in my face differently than most people did, and they loved me. Their love radiated, and you can tell by the look that you get from some people that they genuinely care. And I believe when Jesus looked at that gentleman who was weighing some heavy things, that man absolutely knew for sure that Jesus loved him. He felt it all the way through. That look that Jesus gave him and that love that he felt was real. And that will make that decision so much harder. That is why he walked away sad, because he felt that love. But he walked away sad because he had things that he didn't want to let go of, right? So anyway, just beautiful picture. Can we do that? Can we look at our students with that genuine love? And it has to come all the way from the heart. And it comes from a heart that's filled with the love of Christ. We have looked into the face of Christ and received his love. We know that we're loved, and that's how we pass it on. So today we want to look a little more about what these young people, these children are like when they come into our classrooms. And I feel like maybe a big part of my sessions actually kind of geared towards the students who might be sidelined. And so I apologize for that in one way, but in another way, I want us to think of each student being worthy of that love. But sometimes there are some children that challenge us more, and they make it maybe extra challenging for us to love them. And I would really like for us to think, how can we take on that attitude of Christ to be able to love each one of these? Can we create a classroom where every child is received and they fully feel like they belong there, they're cared for? Genesis 1 verse 27, we'll start there with a foundational verse. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. When God created man, and I remember growing up thinking about this verse, if I was created in God's image, that kind of meant like image. Okay, so what I see with my eyes. So the shape I see with you, that's kind of what God's shape is. That's kind of as far as my mind went. And I discovered later on that there's a lot more things about us that is like God, in the way that we have the ability to relate, in the way that we are made spiritual and we can connect spiritually, in the way that he's given us emotions and all those different emotions that we have. There's things that are like God. We're created in God's image in multiple ways. And I don't know that it's even so much that we're created in God's image in the way we look, as in two legs, two arms, and a body, as it is more the ability to relate to people, the emotions and the heart and the spiritual side of us. So if each student has that image of God in them, what does that make, what does that call for us to do? And this is not just a verse that tells us what normal adults are supposed to treat each other like. This really should start helping us understand that when there is a child in your classroom that seems to be particularly disruptive and maybe awkward, children that are hurting, maybe they're withdrawn, and they seem like they don't fit in very well, even those children carry that same image. And there's something that needs to be unpacked in a way that they can come to flourishing. And so our role as educators is not only to teach the children, but to reflect Christ's heart to every child, especially those that are the most vulnerable among us. You know, there's a hidden weight that some children carry that you can't tell. And sometimes you can tell by their actions that there's something going on. And sometimes it's good for us to acknowledge the reality or to understand the reality. You may be quite aware of the student who's struggling that there may be dysfunction in the home where the child is from. There may be trauma in the child's past or even unpredictability in the child's present life. There may be inconsistent discipline. Maybe the child experienced neglect at some point, and there's broken attachments. And when you see children like that, often they, if for me as a teacher, it can be hard to know how can I get through that barrier, because they're really guarding themselves and they seem to have a wall that makes it really hard for me to connect with them. And yet these are the children that most badly need to know that they also belong. They are loved and they're appreciated, and that we'll accept them right where they're at. They don't have to become perfect first. We accept them and we love them where they're at and help them grow. But in a classroom, sometimes that creates some interesting situations. Some children just haven't learned social skills. I had a student one time, and we would be sitting around our class table, and some of his etiquette was a little bit low, and he would just grab his sleeve and just blow his nose really loud into his sleeve. And you know, how do you train these little things? You know, but it came from a place of having low social skills and not a lot of training in the home, and there were other issues. This boy was also, he had some unique challenges, and he had been labeled in a public school previously with a couple of disabilities or issues. But I noticed something as the year progressed, and about halfway through the year, when he entered the school classroom, you could tell that he relaxed, and he was able to just be himself, and he began to act like the school was a safe place, because he had been there long enough, he had been treated with dignity, and even though there were things like that that were awkward, I trained him like another student. It seemed, okay, it looks like he doesn't know this, so I'm going to just pull him aside and tell him the proper way. So whenever you need to blow your nose, just step outside the door here, grab a piece of tissue, you know, don't use your sleep. And then he did. And, you know, we still heard it through the door because it was really loud, but at least he was outside the door. And those are little things. If children don't present those things on their own, it is your job to help the parents in getting their children trained. And don't make it awkward. Just make it part of life. You just roll with it. So the awkward social skills. Now, what's probably more hard is that these students often have a hard time connecting with their peers. And their peers have less experience and skill and maybe less of a heart for that than you do. And so if you can take an extra interest in just caring for these students, loving them, that can go a long ways. What often happens is and some of these children may be able to connect very well with their peers, but they, because of the trauma they've had, they may have explosive emotions that create issues. All of a sudden, everything flies apart in the playground, right? And they become totally withdrawn and they just don't want to connect with anyone. And this really stems from a lot of distrust and distrust of authority. And that can come from numerous different things. When children are different, or seem different, or they seem difficult, can we take on the attitude of Christ? I don't think we often understand what all causes that. But it can be something as little as the fact that they don't know where their next meal will come from. And we live in America. We think, I mean, who doesn't know where their next meal is coming from? Especially if the child is coming to your school, a church school. You would think that whatever home they came from, most likely they know where their next meal is coming from. But they may have had an experience in the past, whether they were in a foster situation or whether they had a disruptive home or a very poor situation. Sometimes children just don't know where their next meal is coming from, and it can cause them, their mind, to literally shut down for years down the road if they don't know for sure where their food is coming from. I'd like for us to think in Scripture, we have Psalm 34, verse 18, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. A lot of the brokenness we see in the world today is not our fault. It is the way that the world is because the curse is here. And one of our callings, one of our jobs is, as kingdom believers, is to push back that curse that is present in our world. And we bring restoration in the small little things. We're not able to fix everything, but we can make a difference in some people's lives. And in James 1, verse 27, we're taught that pure religion is to look after the orphans and the widows in their distress. And so when there's a child that is in a broken situation, carrying distress, we are called to be close to them just as Christ was, to look at them in their face, to show them love. I don't know how many of you have interacted enough with a student like this, but it's often obvious already in the morning when they walk in the classroom. They carry themselves a certain way. And this doesn't have to be a child from a hard situation. This could be a child from a healthy home. But if they had a little bit of a tussle, if they had a little bit of a problem, they didn't get the bag of chips because there was one bag and they had to pick crackers or something to put in the lunch or whatever it was, just a little thing, and it wasn't resolved before they jumped out of the van at school, they can bring that into the classroom, and that can create enough dysfunction in a child's mind that they're not able to study. And you'll notice sometimes that there's a child, they seem to be shut down today. You don't know what's going on. And I found that the most helpful thing for a young child like that is for you to help them to tell the story. Help them talk about what's going on. What is making you feel the way you feel today? And just ask them. And I know that can feel kind of intimidating because now you're asking them maybe for some personal stuff. Maybe they don't want to tell you the personal story. But if you can get them to tell a little story, can you tell me what's going on? And you just show some interest and then ask them, well, was it resolved? Sometimes it doesn't have to be resolved. All they need is someone to care, someone to listen. And once somebody cares and you can show some empathy and say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Do you have enough to eat? Or whatever you need to ask to kind of give some empathy. Maybe you can offer something. But often that will clear that side of the brain where they're able to think clearly again. That emotional thing is at least resolved far enough to where they can think logically. And now the math lesson is feasible again. So, think of your schools. And probably all of you can think of at least one student that you went to school with or that is in your school that is sometimes hard to reach. What are the subtle ways that these students get sidelined in our schools? Is it most common among the students? Or is it even possible that it's among the teachers? I'd like to look a little bit at the teacher attitudes, because our attitudes matter a lot in this situation. Children from hard places are at great risk of being unintentionally sidelined in our schools, even though we don't intend to. And so what might be some common things? So teachers like to talk after school about how the day went and discuss these things. And I actually think it's a very healthy thing to stay connected, to understand. But if the underlying attitude that the teachers have is that when you tell you, do you know what happened today? And then you roll your eyes and you don't even have to say the student's name. Everybody knows what story's coming out next. And it kind of carries that negative connotation. And it also carries with it something else. When you talk and think about a student that way and the whole staff culture becomes, you know, we have this problem child and it's kind of our project here. You invariably lower your expectations for that student. And when you lower your expectation for that student, you're not calling him up to the level that we should be calling him up to. And so treating them as a disruption rather than a true image bearer can really have long-lasting effects in the child's life. And they might not be able to pinpoint that they don't feel loved, that they know who's being mean to them, but it's just in the atmosphere. And you as teachers are the ones that can change that atmosphere. Students often don't know how to do that. But if you can model that, then the student who is bold, who's brave, who knows a little bit about what it's like to reach out, they'll join you. And you can start building an atmosphere where it's very common to include these people. You know, Jesus told us, whoever welcomes one such child, and it could be any child, but I would like to especially think any such child, the one who is disruptive or the one who is healthy emotionally, welcomes Jesus. How we treat children from hard places is how we treat Christ himself. So I have a question. What if every challenging behavior wasn't a problem, but rather a signal? And the signal is this. The child is asking, will you really love me anyway? And I know sometimes that's very challenging, because when a child presents a certain behavior, it does everything in me to become frustrated and to lose my patience. And now I'm supposed to hold it together when they did something that really tested me, and they already know that this is pushing my buttons. But what if that's the very thing that the child is doing? They're trying to understand, am I truly loved? Will you love me anyway, even if I have these problems? And I know that sometimes children actually do the very thing that they do in order to find out if they're loved. And it feels so immature. You just wish that they would accept that you already do love them and not have to test you on such a challenging way. So I would just challenge us as teachers, especially, to guard our hearts and to guard our words. Let's stop negative group conversations, but fill them with hope-filled, Christ-centered, loving relationships. We can talk and discuss them, but the underlying attitude that comes along with it, we really need to guard that part. And then pray daily that you'll have a Christ-like heart and be intentional about giving dignity in every intention. So what can we do about this? There's a number of things that we can do that could make a difference, especially when you first start this relationship. I would encourage you to seek to know a child's story. I remember in the early days when I was first discovering some of these children and I didn't know their story, I always didn't know how much do you ask a child? How much do you get them to talk about this? But everyone likes to talk about themselves. And if you can get a child to talk about their story, whether it's beautiful or whether it's ugly, if you can get them to just talk about it, go sit at lunch with them or go walk with them, or if you need to, and it's a really challenging situation, take them out for frozen yogurt or something and have a one-on-one with them. But seek to know their story, one conversation at a time. You don't have to know everything, but just show some kind of interest. I remember two students that I had a lot of conversations with, because we have chosen to eat lunch in the gym every day so that all the students are together, and we have this one interaction where all the students are in the same room, even though we don't interact at recess very much. But these two boys who were from a unique situation would often come and sit with me. And the one wanted to talk about Legos, and he was 13, 14, 15, 16. He was still talking about Legos. It was his favorite thing. And, you know, it seemed like he was behind in development in some ways, but he was drilled in on a couple things. And so we talked about Legos, and he would bring me his Lego things, and he would make boats this big and float them in the bathtub while he was taking a bath, and he'd talk about it. And I was like, a little awkward, 16-year-old, okay, sure. And he would bring these things, and they had been in the bathtub with him. But anyway, we talked about Legos. The other student loved games, and he was from a situation where there was a lot of gaming going on a computer or a phone, and then he was a really good artist, but the kind of art he liked to draw, just it wasn't my thing. I mean, it was punk rock cartoon stuff. I didn't even know what that was, so he showed me some stuff. I mean, he talked about these games and all the interactions and the ways that you could build these games, and they were kind of like building things. And you would think that people would at some point mature out of these things and kind of move on, but some of these children, when they have had hard times, they narrow down on a few things and find some comfort. And what's easy for us to do is we know what our value system is. You know what your community accepts. And if those games are just not really part of your community, how are you going to interact? Are you going to just shut that conversation down and not talk about it, tell them not to talk about it? Because we do have some things in our handbook that says we don't talk about. But should I shut down every conversation, or can I somehow actually show interest enough and let him talk about what's really on the inside of him? Because if you can't, if they can't ever talk about what's really going on inside, how will you really help them? That's a challenge situation. But showing care by listening to their story and just showing interest in the things that they do like to talk about. Proverbs 20 verse 5 says, "The purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, but one who has insight draws them out." And I think that's part of our job as teachers. We draw out the deep things that are locked up and hidden inside of children sometimes. If these students are struggling with motivation, and we wish that they would be able to level up to the rest of the class, but they're way behind, at some point you have to look for the small wins. And as one of our co-teachers back home would always say, everyone can reach for 10% better. You might not be able to jump up to being an average student, but maybe you can do 10% better than you did on your last report card. And if your last report card, you had a 60 and whatever, if you can do 10% better, and we do that all the way through the school year, you're making progress, and then you celebrate those wins. You recognize their efforts, even though they're small, and you notice that, and you thank them. You publicly say something, and you consider how you can help them along. Create inclusive moments. It can be easy for these students to not be included in a lot of activities. And so if you pick teams, or if you have buddy systems, or whatever, you have peer groups that are working together, if you kind of rotate them and you intentionally include them in certain groups, and if it's a really tough situation, you make sure they're included in a group where they will be received, where there's a friendly person and so forth, that can be a great help. But what do you do when it comes to discipline? We want to use restorative or redemptive discipline. We want to correct with dignity. And I know how challenging as a teacher sometimes it is when there's a certain behavior that really, really just hits us wrong. And it pushes all of our buttons. And it makes me lose all of my patience, and I want to just stop it right here and now, and my face changes, and I get, you know, it, because there are some things that do that to us. There are some things that are just like the big no-nos in our life, right? And the child does it, and the child does it again. How can we remember to not shame a student like this, and to care for them, to correct them with dignity, to bring them up in the fear of the Lord, not in the fear of a man who is angry or a lady who is angry? I think it's helpful when you see behaviors and issues to, whenever appropriate, to address them as soon as possible. And my staff and team know that that's not my strength, okay? I've grown in that, but that was not my strength. I would tend to, in the earlier years, watch the situation, hope that the problem would go away. But you find out after a while that usually that doesn't happen. And if you just immediately, you notice something and say, you know what, I know where that's going. That's probably going to create problems down the road. And you just nip it in the bud. You go and address it while it's the first time you ever saw them do it. You still talk about it because it's the first time. And you just go and address it. You pull them aside. If it's in the playground, if it's in the gym, if it's at lunchtime, if it's in the line. And here's a kind of a way that I do things. If a child did something in public and everybody saw it, I don't mind stopping right there and just pulling them aside and let everybody see it. They did it in public. I'm going to quickly pull them aside and have a little private talk with them and let them go back. But if it's something that's not so public, I would try to be more careful. Say, hey, at recess time, can you just meet me in this classroom or behind this door and we'll talk. Students might know that I'm talking to them. I don't try to hide all of that, but I try to be discreet to where when I talk to them, I can look in their face. Their buddies aren't looking at them, and at least give them the dignity that they can have peace. There's nobody else watching them. And you as teachers can do a lot to be an advocate for these students. Stop the gossip or the mistreatment quietly and firmly. Help the rest of the students to take on loving these students as well. What is so important in a child's life, and what is so important for you, is that all of us, we need to belong somewhere. And we know that when we follow Christ, we belong to Christ's family, don't we? And we're a part of Christ's body. But sometimes you can be a part of a church and feel quite lonely, and because you don't have real close emotional connections. And the same way for these children. If even though they are a part of your school, if there's a student that looks like they're lonely and they don't feel like they belong, what would it take to really help a child feel like they belong? You know that belonging is actually not an optional thing for humanity. It is truly an essential part of our existence. We cannot always change a child's home environment, but we can create a classroom that reflects Christ's heart for him, for them. So I just have a few things. I might have mentioned some of these already, but practical things that you can do to help students feel included. Making eye contact, calling them by name. Students like to hear their names said. Body language, the way you turn your body toward the person rather than having your feet skewed in a different direction as if you're kind of wanting to get out of the room, or if you cross your arms, that sends a whole signal. This is for all of your students. If you have an open palm, your open palms are the friendliest part of your hands. If you clench your fist when you're talking, they'll see that. They'll notice the tenseness in your muscles, and it'll make them uncomfortable. If you stick them behind your back, or if you are sticking them in your pockets, all these things are just with your arms. If you can just keep your arms available and use your arms for motions, it'll calm them. And then use eyes that look in their face. Look right at their face. If it's a young child, get down on your knee and just look at them at face level. If they're at their desk, get down on the face level and get in front of them to where you can look into their face. That communicates a lot of dignity. And sometimes children have a hard time making eye contact. I try so hard to have one solid little eye contact in the morning with those children every day. Just when they come in, they don't want to look at you. And so I will do everything I can. I'll either place myself in a classroom in such a way that when they come in, I can look at them. And if they don't look at me, I might even just make a small comment and just say, hey, in the mornings when I greet you, can you just look at me? And just you invite them to do that. That way they know it's welcoming and they begin to get used to it. If they have very few people that they can look into their eyes with, but if they know it's safe with one person, it begins to build trust to where they realize that they can grow in trust with other people as well. They might still do that to a lot of people, but it begins to change things. We already talked about connecting at lunchtime or about their hobbies, but if you can ask follow-up questions about their little interesting things, it can mean so much to them. Maybe even follow-up questions about their weekend or what was tough for them and so forth. In our schools, we often have close friends. And in our handbook, we actually have this thing that cliques will not be tolerated. And I have to admit, I don't know how to handle that. We have had cliques, and we have had close friends, and we've had kind of everything in between. And that seems like students, as they grow up, will kind of latch on to a close friend at some point. And sometimes as they grow up, there's a whole group of students that seem to be great friends, and then somewhere at the middle grades and hitting high school, they discover they're not best friends with everybody anymore. And then they kind of click off into a couple groups. Some people get hurt. And I'm just not the best person to know how to handle that, especially when it's among the young ladies. There's a lot of emotions that go on among the young girls that I don't know about. I do know one thing. In our team, we have a couple of teachers that are aware of this. And we've asked them, can you just be more engaged with that? Can you interact with these girls? Because I don't catch on to everything. And it's funny because then sometimes we have a conversation later and say, Mr. Peters, do you know what's going on? No, I don't know what's going on. I'm just glad you know what's going on. And they realized Mr. Peters does not know near everything that's going on in this situation. But we can do things like, I don't know if your school does something like buddies or where they do things where you pair them up for certain things. But if you buddy them up with people that are not near their peer, and you give them a little bit of assignment and you allow them to interact, it can build some relationships. And often you get some pushback, but in the long run, it really is healthy for them. John 13, verse 34. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples if you love one another. And this verse is often used in the context that the world around us will know that we are Christ's disciples. But I'd like you to also think of it as all the children in the classroom will know that you are Christ's disciple by the way you love one another. I'd like to close with a story. We have a sister in our church who came from a tough place. And she grew up, and she is an older lady in our church, and she advocates for children from hard places. I interviewed her and asked her if I could tell the story. I'm not using her name. I don't know that she would really mind, but here's the story. There was a girl, one of eight children, who grew up in a very unstable home in Pennsylvania, in a Mennonite home. Her mom kind of came and went, and her dad often flew off the handle, and life at home was unpredictable and at times frightening. And the one place that felt safe for this girl was at school. By seventh grade, she was really struggling, and it was the first time she had a male teacher. That year, he was very strict. He was by the book. He didn't have much patience for students who didn't meet expectations. And when she failed the grade, it only confirmed her quiet sense that she didn't measure up. The next year, everything changed. A new teacher, a woman who quickly noticed the girl's distress, saw something in her that others had overlooked. And she made a bold decision. Rather than holding her back in seventh grade, she placed her in eighth grade. This single act of confidence gave the girl a much-needed boost. For the first time in a long time, she began to believe that she could succeed. And she eventually took an entrance test into Lancaster Mennonite High School. And she was accepted. She also took a test for the nursing program. And she passed that test. And it really surprised her because of how she had struggled in the past. After she finished high school, the entrance into the nursing class was actually full. The class was full that year, so she took another year. And this detour actually led her to enroll in a Bible school. And she intended to stay only for 1 week. But during her week there, she started realizing that there were a lot of things going on. And she found somebody. She decided to stay an extra week. And during the second week of Bible school, everything changed. She found an older girl she had been watching and looking. She knew she needed to talk to somebody. And she shared her experience. And this lady knew that she just needed to listen. And she knew that there was a crisis. And there was a decision this girl needed to make. And this ended up in a drastic conversion experience, where she encountered God in a way that transformed her from the inside out. She ended up staying all 12 weeks of Bible school. And when she finally returned home, she was almost unrecognizable by her family. They had been attending a church that was shifting toward a more liberal expression of dress and identity, but she came home with a renewed and fully changed heart. Her covering was bigger, her dresses were cape dresses again, and her family didn't know what had happened to her. But she was confident of who she was in Christ. This girl's story is a powerful reminder. When love shines through for children from dysfunctional homes, it can make a lasting difference. Even in the midst of brokenness, one teacher's decision to see a student as an image bearer of God rather than a problem changed the trajectory of her life. This sister says that all of her siblings have continued to be in some kind of church, and she is confident that the biggest reason why this happened is because they had healthy schools and churches that they had opportunity to interact with and make friends with that made the biggest difference in their lives. So who in your classroom this year needs you to see them in such a way? And what is one practical way that you will champion the dignity of a student from a hard place this school year? I've often thought about it when I had a student that I knew was going to be a challenge all year long. And I try to just put the attitude of Christ on, say, I will dedicate the rest of this year. I will do my very best to advocate for them, to love them, and try to be there for them, even when it gets tough. Let's close with prayer. Father, we just thank you so much that you create each human being in your image. And sometimes we encounter people where we sense that they're so far removed from the blessings that have been with some of us. And they present unique challenges and make it harder for us to love. And I just pray, especially for each teacher here, that you would give us soft hearts, discernment, and the courage to see each child as Christ does, and to be willing to see the image of Christ. Bless us as we go from here and learn again. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.